Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay from the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So welcome this evening, beginning of the end of the summer, the beginning of August. Unfortunately, Misty's going to be late tonight because she's on the road to Florida from Kentucky, and there's been rain clouds following her through that whole trip, but she will be with us hopefully later tonight on her way home, or when she arrives safely home. And we're going to have a very special guest with us in just a few minutes, Carol Silverman. And before Carol gets on, I just wanted to make a few announcements. I'm still in the process of planning our get-together in November in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. It's going to be a wonderful healing weekend filled with lots of different workshops and activities, and it's a wonderful way to meet other women in your situation who are in all different kinds of transitional phases in their lives as far as moving on. And we had a wonderful get-together last November in Florida, and none of us left the same as the way we came. It was like just unbelievable. It gave us the strength to really keep moving ahead throughout this year. So if you are interested in joining us, please let me know by emailing me at bonk@aol.com. That's bonk@aol.com. And also some very happy news for me that I'd like to share with you is that I had my first book put out in Spanish, which I'm hoping will reach a large segment of the Latino community for women who don't speak English, because I do have a large number of women writing to me because of all the cultural problems that go on within the Latino community, where gay is certainly not an allowable type of lifestyle, that women don't have any kind of help or they don't have any place to turn to, and yet they can't really read the English. So the book has come out. If you know anybody in that situation who's Spanish-speaking, please let me know as well, and I'll be happy to send you to the book, or you can go to my website of www.bonniekbooks.com and always order any of my books that are online. And hold on one moment, and let's see if Carol is joining us. By the way, before Carol does join us, I would like to announce to people that if you would like to call into this show, the phone number is area code 646-716-4893. And we always welcome any of your calls, any of your conversations. It's always good to share and learn what others are going through. So, Carol, is that you? Hello? Hello? Carol? Well, I think I'm getting Carol. Carol, is that you? Hello? Can you hear me? Well, it seems like our caller isn't there. So, if you're on, please hang up and call again, and we'll try to connect. Anyway, thank you all for once again turning into the Straight Wives Show, and we do discuss as many difficult topics for many people who are going through different times in their lives that are very difficult. And first, I'd like to say hello to all of the women who are part of our support chat. We really appreciate the fact that you're willing to reach out to other women who are in need of help. So if anyone is in need of help, definitely write to me and we'll hook you up with our support chat also. And it looks like we have a guest trying to get in, hopefully Carol, but somehow it's not coming through. So we're going to hang up and see maybe if we can try again. For those of you who don't know Carol, we'd like to tell you a little bit about her. Carol, to me, is a very inspirational woman who's a facilitator of the Straight Spouse Network in Westchester, New York. I've known Carol for many years now, and she's truly a remarkable woman who's very inspirational to me. She's a member of the Straight Spouse Network Advisory Committee, and one of their past presidents, as well as a past treasurer. So she's been involved with the group since 1998, and that's a long time. And she's done remarkable things to help find support for women. And like I said, she's done tremendous outreach in her area. And she's been really a motivating person to help people get through the transition of moving on to self-sufficiency. So hopefully Carol's going to be with us now. Hold on one moment. Carol?
It's me.
Hi, Carol. Were you
How
trying
are you?
To call before?
Yes, but it, for some reason it wasn't going through.
Right. Well, I just did a great introduction about you.
Thank you so much.
Giving your whole background and telling them how much you inspire me through all of the work that you do in helping women.
Well, I think it's mutual.
Thank you, Carol. And if any of our listeners would like to call in as we're going through the evening, please dial in area code 646-716-4893. And it seems like we do have a caller, so hold on one second. Hello, can you hear us? Hello?
I'm still here.
Yes, I know you are. I know somebody else is trying to get through, but we're not having any success. But that's all right, Carol. Let's start
they
off with
trying.
You. And about your. And I mentioned, I don't know if you heard earlier, that Misty's on her way back to Florida, so she's going to be joining us a little bit later. She's moving, driving quickly from Kentucky to Florida with a lot of rainstorms behind
her.
Oh, my
goodness. Like
I told her, you'll pick up the slack, so I wasn't worried about it. So, Carol, can you tell us a little bit about your experiences?
With my now ex-husband?
Mm-hmm. That would be a good start.
Okay. Well, I met him at Tuckerman Ravine, a crazy place that people go to ski the Memorial Weekend, and that was the May of 1969. And met him and a friend of his. I was up with my ski club, and he was with his, and I really thought I'd fix him up with a friend of mine, which never happened. And long story short, we ended up getting married. That's a very long story, much shortened. And but it was never any romance from the very beginning. But like the Fiddler on the Roof song, I figured, well, we'd learn to love each other. And, you know, first it wasn't so great before we got married, but I figured, well, okay, once we got married, things would be better. And then once we started having kids, oh, that would make it much better. And then, you know, I got to the point where I was hoping that, you know, just anything would make it better. At one point, I was locking my kids out of our bedroom, hoping that that would make it better. In 1983, a couple years after our third kid, I had my fallopian tube plugged, figuring, well, maybe we're just worried we're going to get pregnant again, so I didn't have that to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years later, well, not a couple of years later, but it was the first week of April of 1997 that I actually found out what was going on. In the December of that year, we had closed his business, which we had bought him a business many years earlier, my family, and he had basically run it into the ground, and we had finally just stopped the bleeding and let it go. And so my daughter had caught him on the computer making dates on the gay chat line, or it looked like that to her anyway, and he talked his way out of that one. That was about January of 1997, and so he bought himself about 4 months. He said, well, no, it's not that. It's just that, you know, there are a lot of people talking. I don't have any social life now because I'm never in the city and I'm never, you know, exposed to other people, and I'm just, you know, playing around, and I'm not acting on anything, and I'm just playing around. And so he bought himself 4 months, but in April of 97, I actually saw something on the computer myself. It was on the AOL's gay chat line. He had stepped away from the computer, and I walked through the room, and there it was. And some guy was asking him, how do you maintain privacy? And he had answered back, I'm very careful. Now, had I gone through the room even a couple of, you know, a minute later, the screensaver would have been up.
Mm-hmm.
But during that time, the screensaver did go up, and I thought to myself, oh, my God, you know, our life has just changed, and you know, I kind of went into a catatonic state for a while with what did this mean to my, you know, it's the same person, but now I have another piece of information, and what did this mean to me and my family? And that really explained a lot about our marriage, which, you know, was never obviously ever going to get better, whether the kids came or went or whether they were in our bedroom or not. Our marriage was not going to be any better ever because there was no chance of that. And, you know,
now
I finally it all fell into place.
Let me ask you this question before you go
sure.
on.
Sure.
Okay, your kids first noticed something on the Internet, correct?
My youngest daughter was at 16. She was a sophomore in high school, yeah.
Okay, and she came and told this to you?
Yeah. So we confronted him with what's going on here, and he said, oh, it's nothing. She had learned sign language. She's a hearing person, but she had learned sign language, and she had created on AOL a deaf chat line, and that was just wonderful because all these deaf people could chat with each other. And his anchor was, well, you know, on the deaf chat line, there are only about 12 people talking, and on the gay chat line, there are about 200, so it makes for better conversation. And we actually had no suspicion, and so we bought it, and he was a pathological liar, so everything he said was a lie anyway, but you know, it always made sense. It's like O.J. with the gloves, you know. So, and half-truths were whole lies and all kinds of stuff like that. And so,
Let me ask you this question, Carol.
Sure.
Before this happened in your own life, had you heard much about gay men getting married?
Not a peep. It never occurred to me, and I think I'm a smart person, never occurred to me the whole paradigm of life was that gay men met with the gay men. They found women basically repulsive, and they interest in marrying gay with straight women. I had never in a million years would have thought of it. It just never occurred to me.
And that was in the 1990s, right?
And this was in the 1990s. I mean, I knew gay people. Gay people were gay. That's why they were gay. And they didn't have, men didn't have to do with women, and women didn't have to do with men. And each their own, and, you know, they all seemed happy enough with what they were doing. And, you know, those that I knew, I mean, we even partied with a whole bunch of them. In the gourmet food business, you know, his answer was, because all of his friends seemed to be gay men. I said, well, hey, well, that's the business. You know, it's the business. And we would go to places and I'd be the only woman in the room. But that's the business. You know, this is who, you know, who's in the business is all these gay people. And we would go to the trade show at the Javits Center, and he would point out, well, that guy is gay, but he's married because, he, you know, she's rich, or he's married because she's a good housekeeper or whatever. And my answer to him was, what do I care? I don't have to sleep with him. So he'd been sending up text balloons for a while, but I hadn't figured it out.
No, well, it's really hard to figure that out because in your particular case, there was never great passion or...
Never loved each other.
Or, you know, affection in the marriage to start with, correct?
Never.
So it's not like it deteriorated, it was just never really there.
It was never there and it never could have been there.
Did you ever wonder why?
Not really. I just figured, well, you know, my kids would come home and they'd say, gee, we're over visiting, you know, so-and-so's family, and they're always kind of rubbing past each other and giving a little kiss and giving a little touch, and I don't see that. They didn't see that in our family. I said, well, you know, some people are more, just more affectionate than other people. What did I know? I mean, that was the only answer I could think of. And, you know, then they accepted it and it seemed to make sense to me, so, you know, some families are just more affectionate than other families.
Would you say that you had a good friendship with your husband?
We were companionable. That's the best I'll give it. We were not best friends, but we were companionable. We had some of the same interests. We both liked to ski. Now he liked to decorate and cook, which was fine by me because I'm very left-brained. Just show me a column of numbers and I'm happy. And he loved to decorate. He loved to cook, and that was I never learned to cook. And I hope I, you know, I'm 66 now, and I probably don't intend to ever learn to cook. Why should I? And you know, if he wanted, we had friends who got married before we did, and they were fighting over the kitchen. And so when we got married, I said, no problem here. You want the kitchen? You got the kitchen. It's all yours. You take the kitchen. And he was perfectly happy with that. And, you know, it worked, but who knew?
Well, in retrospect, when you look back at it now, were there other signs that you definitely missed? In other words, times that he was missing or away?
Well, he covered that up with the, well, you know, when we had our honeymoon, we got twin beds. That would have been a clue, I guess. But, you know, I figured, oh, well, he doesn't know how to book things, and, you know, he made a mistake. When I met him up at Tuckerman's Ravine, he was with a guy named John, and John had a girlfriend who he never married, and ultimately she, you know, finally said, listen, I want to get married, and if I'm not going to marry you, I'm moving on. And to this day, he's still single because I see him once in a blue moon. He lives in White Plains. And once a blue moon, I see him, and he never did marry. So, I mean, birds of a feather flock together. You don't find gay men hanging around with straight men and vice versa.
That's so true.
But I never assumed that John was gay. I mean, just I thought he was an attractive guy, and he was dating this you know, other nice lady named Barbara, and we all double-dated, and we got along just fine. But now anybody who I know who was a friend of his is definitely under suspicion. But I have no gaydar. There are some of us who got into this because we just have no gaydar, and I'm certainly one of them.
Well... it's hard to develop. I mean, either you go overboard and think everybody's gay, you know, which I think a lot of us go through after our marriages.
Oh, absolutely. If I were to date again, I would have to call one of my gay friends and say, hit on him and see what happens. Well, go see, because my gay friends have gaydar. I don't.
Carol, I have a much better test for gay than that.
Well, I've read your book, so I know you have that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I tell women all the time, when you think there's any doubt, when you meet a guy, you take him to a porno movie of gay men, and if anything's happening with him down there, he's gay.
But that means I have to go to a porno movie with gay men.
No, you just rent it for your house.
you do it at home in the privacy.
Do it at home in the privacy of your own home.
Yeah,
well. Yeah. I said that's the only way
I'll keep
that.
I'll keep that in mind, but frankly, I'm not much into gay porn.
Yeah, well, you don't have to watch the porn, just watch him.
Yeah, just watch him, okay. Well, that's your thought.
Yeah, well, that's one of the ways I tell women, that's how you can really find out something.
Uh-huh.
Because a lot of these men are just so good at hiding it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're living a lie every day, you know, living in a straight world, pretending to be straight. And they've learned how to cover their tracks, and especially in long-term marriages, when it's not something that's recent, you know, you're doing this year in and year out. And you have excuses for everything.
Right.
And women just don't want to believe, you know, the worst of anything, you know, because what could be worse than finding out that your husband's gay? So,
well, so many of them are pathological liars anyway. They've been doing it for so long that they really do believe it.
Well, I think they really do develop sociopathic behavior just from living a lie every day.
Absolutely.
So that in time, lying just becomes inherent in their personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't take anything to lie. I mean, I've had gay men tell me that they just started lying about everything, even things they didn't have to lie about. And they didn't even know why they were lying. It's just that it became second nature to them.
Yeah. Well, we finally figured out that he was a pathological liar, but we only did it looking backward. I mean, he would lie about absolutely everything, and he'd get caught 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
In a lie, and we would just say, well, you know, he thought that's what we wanted to hear, or he didn't want to have an argument. We're always making excuses for him, like your friend Wendy's list. You're always making excuses for things that don't add up,
mm-hmm.
and filling in the blanks and, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
So
how long was it before the two of you split up after that revelation?
Well, I didn't quite know what to do, and I figured I better, you know, get my ducks in order before I say anything. So that was the first week of April of 97, and it was August. Well, in the meantime, my daughter had figured it out, too. And I guess it was by June that we both figured out that we both knew so we could talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, listen, you know, you're going away in August for a program. I'm taking you to the airport. And, you know, if you want me to keep him around for the next couple years, we'll look like the same family. The only thing we have is another piece of information. Nothing will be different. And, you know, when you go off to college, I'm definitely not going to be married to him anymore after that. There's just no reason for that. But, if
mm-hmm.
you know, if it'll make you happy, we'll stay married for the couple of years until you leave. And at first she said, yes, that was really terrific and that was a good idea and, you know, so on and so on. Just everything status quo and nothing would change.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of weeks later, she came to me, and this was because kids of divorce don't have control over anything. The judge tells them who they're going to see and when they're going to see, and I just didn't want my child, you know, to be out of control on this one, so I gave her complete control over it, which
mm-hmm.
was fine by me. We'd lived together all these years. What's another couple of years? And so she came back after a couple of weeks, and she said, you know, I can't do this. It's a lie, and I can't live a lie. I've got too much integrity for that. And so the plan was that when I drove her to the airport in August to go away on her little one-week adventure, whatever it was, that I would come home and I would confront him. And by the time she got back, he would be gone. And that was really what I thought was going to happen,
mm-hmm.
that I was going to tell him what I knew, and he was going to say, yes, you're right, I'm sorry, I never meant to hurt anyone. What can I do? And I was going to say, you can leave and, you know, keep in touch as you want, but get out of the house, which, after all, my family had bought for us. Anyway, unfortunately, I'm not as smart as I look sometimes, and I was confiding in his sister, who I thought I had a very good relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
And so she knew the plan. And so, of course, he knew the plan. And so he was waiting for me in the kitchen when I got back from the airport, and I confronted him. And he said, I'm not gay, you're crazy, and I'm not leaving. So my throat, my mouth just dropped. I just couldn't believe what I was hearing because it was so, you know, not the plan at all. And I didn't have a plan B.
Mm-hmm.
So I left the house for a couple of hours, during which time he got on the phone and called my father and my best friend, who was at the time a psychiatric social worker, and convinced them that I was crazy, that I had finally flipped out, and that I really needed some psychological help. And that, you know, all this kind of, well, of course, they knew the story, but they said he was very convincing. If they hadn't known the story, they would have believed him.
Mm-hmm.
So we then proceeded to continue to live together for about 18 months before I could get him out of the house. And during that 18 months, in December, my son came home from California with packing up some stuff to take back. And basically, we're in the driveway with my husband at 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning. And my husband picked a fight with him. We had never, ever fought. That was just so working how we ran our family. We didn't argue. We didn't yell. We didn't scream. We didn't fight. And suddenly, he's beating up on my little kid. I mean, he wasn't little, but he's only 5'5". And, you know, he's a very petite kind of a flower child person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking out my bedroom window, and he's beating up on him. So I ran down, and I realized that this was getting very much out of hand, and I called the police for the first time in my life. I called the police because this was out of hand. And basically, he tried to kill him. He jumped, the kid ran behind the car to get away from him, and he put the car, started the car, gunned the engine in reverse, and tried to run him over. So kid ran into the bushes to get away, and I have a very tall hedge. He ran into the bushes and got away, and at that point, my now ex-husband, you know, drove away and, you know, went to work. He was working, you know, in Manhattan, and he drove away, ran over a screwdriver on the way out of the driveway because there were some tools, and got a flat tire and limped to the gas station and then went to Manhattan. By the time the little police lady got here, it was about 20 minutes, and it's only a 5-square-mile town, and, you know, she took a statement, basically. And so we had an attempted murder trial in the middle of my divorce. And he got off, it was during the O.J. era, and we called him the other Teflon man, because no matter what happened, everything came out fine for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got off because there weren't enough credible witnesses.
But did he come back home that day?
Yes, he did. He came back home, and he stayed here for a total of 18 months. I couldn't get him out of the house. Now, if I had, I could have lied and said that he had threatened me as well and gotten an order of protection.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of felt that my kid had to see that one of her parents wasn't a liar.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to come down to his level, which I probably should have done, because we lived in fear of our lives for those whole 18 months. He had been a research chemist, and he had fabulous taste buds. And he was on the taste panel of whatever pharmaceutical company he was working for. So he could detect like a grain of sand in a gallon of salt in a gallon of water.
Mm-hmm.
We thought he was going to try to kill us, my daughter and I. And so I was buying everything in one serving container, like apple juice and, you know, whatever, cereal and milk, whatever in my refrigerator. If it was a container that was opened, we didn't touch it again because we thought he'd try to kill us too.
How did this whole incident, how did it affect your children?
Well, you know, the one who lived with me at the time, my youngest daughter, who had 2 years of living, you know, he didn't leave the house until almost when she would go to college.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was February of 99 when I finally got him out of the house by paying him some exorbitant amount of money from our very bad judge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that was what happened. The judge was completely sympathetic to all the men in her courtroom, including the ones I knew were gay, and there were other women there who I knew from my support group. And she just treated the men. She was between men. She ditched her husband because she'd gotten bored with him, and she was flirting with every man in the courtroom and giving him anything they wanted. So he walked off with a small fortune from me because I was the moneyed spouse. And I know you're very much one of your soapboxes is that they should pay for the whole thing, and I certainly agree with you on that. But it cost a fortune to get rid of him.
Terrible. And how
yeah,
did you
really
live in fear like that?
Yeah.
And then,
meanwhile, the other kid in June of 99, my older daughter graduated from college and took one look at what was going on in the house and said, I can't live like that, and went with some Frank on a trip to California and really basically never came back.
So what kind of relationship did the kids have with their father as they were growing up?
He would go to their soccer games, I mean, or whatever they would, you know, my son was not an athlete, but my daughter, you know, played a lot of soccer and volleyball and stuff. And the deal was that if that was the family activity, he would go because he was trying to pretend he was part of the family and a normal father.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what I got from my older daughter. Well, he came to all my games. Well, sure, he came to all your games. That was a requirement for fathers to do in those days.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't go above and beyond. And the only time he really disappeared was after lunch every day. That's when he would have his little sexual stuff going on. He would call, you know, say 1 or 2 o'clock and say, okay, I'm going out for my lunch break now, and that's how I wouldn't call and find him not there.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we'll talk about the carpool situation for the evening. And then he'd go off to the bathhouses and the other places around town. His place was at 59th and Park. And believe it or not, there are bathhouses in that neighborhood, as well as other places where men can do whatever it is they want to do.
Uh-huh.
And so he was then free to leave for an hour or so and go have some fun. and then go back to work with a big smile on his face.
And how did the things finally end? It was a payoff and he moved
out? It was a payoff, yeah. He never admitted to being gay. He still hasn't. We're now divorced 13 years practically. He has never admitted to being gay. He's never said he's sorry. He has a terrific facility for foreign languages, and so a lot of his boyfriends were from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And thank goodness for all of us, he now lives in Holland, which is far away from us, and he doesn't come into the country very often.
Mm-hmm.
His boyfriends over there set him up, because I read some of the emails that, you know, somehow I got a hold of, and they said they've changed his name. He's now Jan Michel instead of what it had been, and they gave him a new name for the beginning. And they said, oh, well, come on over, we'll set you up, we'll get you an apartment, we'll get you a job, we're a whole bunch of friends over here. And so he did. He went right into it. He had everything all set for him over there.
And how long has he been there?
13 years. Actually, even during our divorce, he spent a lot of time over there, and his lawyer was always having to explain to the judge why he wasn't in the courtroom. Well, he was over there looking for financial, looking for a job and looking for financial interest and stuff like that. There was always some reason. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, basically my money, whatever he could steal from me over the years, is with all of his international boyfriends all over the world. And, you know, he actually signed two false financial statements, fear of perjury, that his lawyer pretended to be shocked when he saw that I had found another $60,000 that weren't on there. And it wasn't that hard to find them. It was an 800 number that I dialed, and I pushed in the numbers. And, you know, they kept saying, well, do you want to know more? And I said, yeah. I pushed, push one for yes. And I kept, so $60,000 that I presented to the judge that hadn't been on two sworn financial statements, and that would have been joint marital property as far as she was concerned, she gave me $12,000 of it. I mean, not even half.
Wow.
So at that point, I stopped looking. It wasn't worth my effort.
Mm-hmm. Carol, let me ask you this. You've been involved
for,
12 years with the Straight Spouse Network.
Yes.
And I'm sure you've worked with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of women.
Quite enough.
And would you say that your case is more extreme?
Yes.
I
am absolutely at one end of the extreme.
Right. I don't want to get everybody.
Not everybody has an attempted murder trial in the middle of their divorce case.
Right.
And not everybody, had cost that much money to get for their freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the women ultimately did get some kind of an acknowledgement from their husband, yes, you're right, I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them even said they were sorry. They never meant to hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I, of course, will go to my grave having not heard that.
Right.
And that's okay. I mean, I've accepted that. And if he said it, I wouldn't believe it anyway. He would be having some ulterior motive if he ever even said those words. But he's still not out.
I think it's
He's 71 years old now, and he's still not out.
Well, I think it's important for women to understand that even though they could be living a gay life, it doesn't mean they're ever going to come out.
Never.
And some men, you can never even pay to go away. I mean, they're just there,
right.
And you're stuck.
That's the truth. I mean, luckily I could afford my freedom.
Right.
But his profile on the internet that my then 16-year-old daughter pulled up she pulled up his profile on the gay chat line on AOL, and it was married, bisexual, Asian men really turn me on,
mm-hmm.
and the length of his penis, and whether he was circumcised, and whether he liked being on the top or the bottom. I didn't even understand, because a lot of it is symbol. There's a C for circumcised and a T for top and so on like that. And it took me, quite a while to figure out from the other women that I finally got involved with the Straight Spouse Network a year later and went to the support group meetings in Manhattan, and that was where I learned what some of this stuff actually meant. But,
yeah.
That's kind of yucky for a 16-year-old girl to be pulling up a profile of her father, because I wasn't as, computer literate, and finding this stuff out about him. I think it's
very devastating for children
yeah.
to have to find that kind of information about their fathers.
Right.
But you had all this information. You had proof.
Oh, yeah, and I found photographs of him naked and erect with some Asian man naked and erect leaning against a mirror, and you could see the reflection from the mirror that it was Jean Salon, and so I looked up in the phone book, and sure enough, a couple blocks from him on Madison Avenue was this Jean Salon. You put it up to the mirror, you could see what it said.
Mm-hmm.
And so apparently on the second floor of Jean Salon, they do such things. The ground floor was probably legit.
With all your proof, what was his explanation?
Oh, nothing. Why was I looking through his stuff? Why, blame the victim, What was I doing in his attaché case, finding these photographs and all? And the stupid thing was, he had them developed at the CVS right down the block from my office. For the name on it, he had used the manager's name who had died a couple of years earlier. I mean, the phone number of his little office in the basement. I mean, he couldn't have been, you know, stupider doing it. I mean, it was obviously who it was. And you think you pick a different CVS, there are hundreds of them around than the one on the same block that I worked on. I mean, it was just crazy when I found those photographs. So I immediately ran them over to Staples, and I told the little teenager behind the counter, I said, don't even look at these. They're really gross, and they're part of a divorce, you know, action. And just make me a bunch of copies. And, you know, and she did, of course, and, you know, gave one to my lawyer and kept one and, you know, spread them around where they had to be spread.
Mm-hmm.
But well, he was, I mean, you know, it wasn't like, but I too, then I would go into denial. I mean, I'd walk through the kitchen sometimes and I'd say, wait a minute, he's right, I'm crazy. You know, how could it be? We're married, we have children, this is really nuts. And then I would have to go into, okay, what about the profile on the internet? What about the color photograph? I'd have to have the physical proof to remind myself, and then I could go back into reality. But I kept going into denial, too. I mean, yeah, he's right, I'm crazy, you know.
And talking about that phase of your life,
yeah,
going through all that, did you think, I mean, you didn't really have any kind of support back, you know, when all this was happening, and you really hadn't heard much about it. But at that point, not now, of course, at that point, did you believe that he was always gay or became gay?
No, I he was gay from the day I met him.
No, but
he was gay from the day
but I'm
was
saying
born.
At that point, what did you think?
I think I believed that he was gay, period. I don't think, I never believed in the flood, in the you know, the continuum or some event happened that made him gay. I don't think I ever, you know, even thought about that as being a possibility. You're either gay or you're not gay, and I think I figured that one out. Because everybody I knew was gay. Nobody had ever become gay of my acquaintances at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were people who were gay and there were people who weren't, and there was nobody that I ever met who said, gee, something happened and I used to be not gay and now I'm gay. It never occurred to me that he was ever... Well, I was the only girl he ever kissed. I mean, that was one thing I asked his sister about. I said, tell me about his previous sex life. And she said, I think you're the only first girl he ever kissed. Well, he met me, he was 24, he was 30 years old. 30-year-old men from Brooklyn have probably kissed a girl before they were 30. And I was the only girl he had ever kissed. So that was kind of, you know...
How did his sister react to all this going on?
Well, she was playing along with me. She, you know, I said, yeah, my first thing was, did you ever think your brother might be gay? And she said, well, she never thought of it, but after all, you know, he wasn't out with a lot of girls ever. He always had a bunch of guys he hung around with. But, you know, in high school, the girls hung out with the girls and the guys hung out with the guys anyway to some extent. But that was sort of her answer. Well, she never thought of it.
But how about in the aftermath? Did that destroy your relationship with her?
What destroyed her relationship was when I realized that she had been telling him everything I told her.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, right up until that time when I confronted him, I thought we were friends. I really had. And we definitely were not friends, because she obviously had told him everything along the way as things were happening. I moved out of the bedroom immediately, and I told him, well, it's because you snore and I can't sleep. And, you know, she obviously told him that at the time. I changed toothpaste because I knew he didn't like gel, and I didn't even want to use the same toothpaste he was using, so I switched to a gel. So little things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But once he knew that I knew, things got Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde-ish. It was no more Mr. Nice Guy. And it was really terrible to be living there with him, you know, for the next while he was in the house.
Terrible.
You know, sharing the kitchen, and, you know, just it was horrible when he would. I put key locks on the door, on the bedroom doors, at you know, where I at this part where I was sleeping and my daughter was sleeping. We put key locks on the doors. We locked ourselves in. We locked ourselves out. It was horrible.
So, Carol, with all the women that you deal with all the time.
Yeah.
You know, throughout, you know, your area, the city, the country. What would you say, you know, as far as how many people remain in their marriages?
A teeny tiny percent, and those do not remain happy. They can stay together because maybe they can't afford not to get divorced, or they have such low self-esteem that they think nobody else will ever want them, or they don't deserve anything better because they've been so, you know, beaten down by their husbands that they think that they're not in any way desirable or anything. If you're never going to have an intimate relationship with your husband after that, there's no integrity. What's the point? But people do stay together. And people stay together in celibate monogamous marriages, in which, in my opinion, nobody's happy. People stay together in, you know, kind of, well, we'll add that person to our family, and, you know, they'll live in the house, and you'll be with them whenever that you want to be with them, and you'll be with me whenever you want to be with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or we'll both be out dating, and, you know, the open marriages. But the women, in general, the women are the ones taken advantage of by their. They go from their mother to a wife to just somebody to take care of them. It's all what they can get out of it, and the woman gets nothing out of it. And, you know, from what little I can see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, they have the security of the paycheck, they have the security of the insurance, it's financial stuff a lot. And like some people think that they're breaking up the marriage. I mean, what part of, forsaking all others, till death do we part? The minute that they stray and they put their, you know, that they've had a relationship with another man, they've broken the marriage. They've broken the marriage vows. So it's not you that's breaking up the family. It's them that broke it up, and you're just finding out about it now. I mean, I wish I had known that he was messing around with men, because I might have messed around, too, in that case, instead of feeling like, gee, I can't do that. I'm a married woman. I'm not allowed to. I wrote a contract.
Uh-huh.
You know, they broke the contract the next day.
Right.
So where's the contract here?
Exactly.
In addition to which, if you bought a house from somebody and they knew they had a major plumbing problem and they didn't tell you about it till afterwards, I think you have some recourse. That's not a valid contract. That's not,
absolutely,
you know, informed consent when you're doing it. And this is certainly a major plumbing problem.
I definitely agree. And that's why, you know, as I've mentioned to our women, I'm really working, you know, in the next few months on my new website, yourfault.com, for, you know.
Yeah.
I feel they have to take responsibility on the divorce end. I mean, it takes two to tango, except in these marriages. It really only takes one to tango, and that's the gay husband, because once you have a husband who's gay, that really takes away any other kind of argument you can ever give for a marriage not working out. Because you can't judge it by other kind of marriage standards, because you're living a lie every day. A man's manipulating you.
Yes, what?
So that, you know, you never quite know what's real and what's not real.
Well, you feel fine.
And so a lot of times you get very angry or you get very frustrated. So the husband can come back and say, well, you know, she's created problems for me in the marriage, but the problems are the ones that he created to start with. So you're kind of living in an Alice in Wonderland type of marriage where everything is backwards and inside out, and you really don't have a sense of what reality is because you're sitting and living their lie every day.
Yes.
Or as I call it, my new terminology, gay lighting.
Yes, I like that. I read that in your piece.
Yes, and so many women are going through that, you know, when they're living through the lies of their husbands. What I would like for you to talk about, a couple things that our listeners have requested. Can you give some advice as far as getting the right lawyer, you know, how to look for, you know, not believing that the husband's telling you about assets that he may have hidden? You know, I think this is like a big issue, how to find a good lawyer.
Well, now, what you need is a forensic accountant. I mean, because they're the ones who are good at doing this. It wouldn't hurt to have a good lawyer, but if you want to find the hidden assets, you need a forensic accountant.
Okay, so let's
because
talk
they know where to look.
Let's talk about a forensic accountant. Where do you find somebody like that?
I guess the phone book or word of mouth or your attorney.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the people who are going to dig up the stuff. These are the people that go into companies and find out who's embezzling. This is their profession, is to find out, you know, trace the money and find out where the money is.
Right. So you would strongly advise that if there's any suspicion?
If there's a real suspicion, yeah, the only problem is that that's expensive. But, you know, but it may be worth it. The way I found that all these $60,000 in stock was just something came in that got, you know, he had the mail changed, I suppose, and something got past the mail change, and so I opened it up, and there was a phone number, and it was an 800 number, and I knew his Social Security number and his mother's maiden name and whatever else you needed, and so I got into it. And then whatever it was, it said, and, you know, when would you like to know about this, too? And I pushed one for yes, and it gave me more information, and would you like to know about that? And that's how I found the $60,000. It was really very, very easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's many years now, so I don't remember exactly, you know, what I pushed, but there was a way of finding out about
it. Well, that was just sheer luck that you had the
mail. That was sheer luck. It was sheer luck, and I found it, like, $60,000 that did me absolutely no good.
But a forensic...
Getting back to the thing about couples that stay together, I want to emphasize the fact that that's my personal opinion, that organizationally the Straight Spouse Network does help and support and deal with mixed orientation marriages and all kinds of stuff like that. It's just my personal opinion, which what I was giving before. The organization is very supportive. If men want to say they're bisexual, fine, be bisexual. There are people who really believe there are bisexuals in the world. And certainly Amity, our founder, is one of them, and there are many people in the organization who believe that. And my attitude toward it is you can call yourself whatever way you want to call yourself if you're having sex with men. I don't care what, you're not straight. Call yourself whatever you want. And if you want to identify as bisexual, you can do that and we can still help your spouse. So a lot of it's just vocabulary.
Yes, I know. A rose by any other name to me is still
right.
A rose.
Right. And men, I don't know about women, but men can have sex with a tree when they're young enough.
Mm-hmm.
And as they get older, it's harder and harder to compartmentalize and to fantasize. And some of the men that I've spoken to through you have said that they had to fantasize that their wife was a man.
Absolutely. That was the only way they were able to perform.
So I don't want to give anybody the impression that the Straight Spouse Network does not serve mixed orientation couples or people who are staying together for whatever their reasons. We absolutely, as an organization, do. But I think
there are some women, I would think, you know, in all fairness, not that I think this way, or you do, that stay together in their marriages, and they seem to accept it quite well, and they're not bothered by it.
Mm-hmm. And they accept the fact that they're going to be brother-sister with their husband.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're going to live together as a family, and some of it has to do with what the neighbors are going to think, and you know, they want to have the illusion of the regular, ordinary American, you know, heterosexual family. And, you know, for some people that's very important, but I think they lose a bit of themselves in that, and I think that they're kind of wasting their time and their energy that they could be off, you know, having a better life. I can only tell you every day away from my ex-husband is a happier day than the day before.
Well, talking about women who are happy to be away from their ex-husbands, I think Misty just joined us, right, Misty?
I'm here, finally.
Hi, Misty.
Yes.
Did you have a good trip?
Hello. Well, I'm glad to be here. It was a very long trip. My dad says this one's going to fit in the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest drive. So.
When did you start out, Misty? Yesterday?
Yesterday morning, very early. Just a lot of bad weather all through the whole trip. So, but I'm here, safe and sound. Glad to be back in Florida. Have some sand under my toes tomorrow for sure.
Well, welcome back home.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Carol, I'd like to ask you a question, which
sure.
is something that Misty and I really don't get involved with, but maybe you can give some insight because people always ask me this question. How does this situation affect men differently than women when they have a lesbian wife?
One of the men that came to one of the other support groups, not mine, but one of the other ones that I go to, said, you know, I can't be that bad if I kept a lesbian happy for 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think men, to some extent, are not quite as devastated as women. And men tend to get right back on the horse. I mean, they can't wait to get out and date again. And many of our men have gotten married, as many of our women have too. But, you know, percentage-wise, a higher percentage, I think, of the men have managed to find other women, heterosexual women, and, you know, seem to be living happily ever after. I think some of the women, you know, and I am one of these people who have trust issues,
mm-hmm.
and I truly haven't dated. I just have trust issues, and it's not worth having to worry about making that same mistake again.
I know that, you know, many, many years ago, I wrote a column about men, and I was kind of chided for it when I stated that, you know, I certainly understand that straight men who have to go through this is devastating, because when I first started my own support group, I did have straight men coming who had lesbian wives.
Uh-huh.
But I found that they were able to adapt better, adjust better, move on better, because, you know, for many different reasons, I don't think they had the same emotional attachment as women have.
No.
They didn't have the same financial issues in many cases that the woman has.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them didn't end up being the primary caretakers of the children.
Right.
Although I do know some that did, but
I know a couple that have also.
Right, but in general, you know, I don't think they became, you know, from the ones that I've met, there's always a few.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think they don't have the same kind of issues to deal with as women do, which is why, you know, when I had to make a decision, I decided just to focus on straight women, because I could understand certainly what, you know, a straight man goes through, and certainly does affect him in some ways, his sexual esteem. You know, some men take it very seriously, you know, and they have a hard time recovering, too. But I just feel in general, I really can't relate to the pain that they're going through nearly as much as a woman, because I've been through that myself.
Yeah. Oh, it's very painful. When they first come to our group and they just found out, it's very, very painful. And many of them didn't realize they were having a problem. Some of them really thought that their marriage was very normal until suddenly the woman says, listen, I've been a good wife and a good mother for 40 years, and I can't do it anymore, and I'm running off with my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And there's a perfectly nice guy who came to the meeting and had this happen, and he has a perfectly lovely wife, and I've met the girlfriend. These are very nice people who just happen to have had this situation happen in their lives. But he was the most surprised person in the world.
Now, from the men that you've spoken to, which is far greater than the men that I've dealt with,
yeah,
do they have the same kind of symptoms within their marriage as far
well,
as black
more
lack
of sexual interest. More just a lack of sexual interest in the women, you know, that comes and goes. But somehow the women are still able to perform easier than the men. I guess,
mm-hmm.
you know, from that point of view, that's one thing you can say. And also, women always have a best friend. Men don't.
Mm-hmm.
If a man has a best friend, you've got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But women, I mean, I have lots and lots of friends. Some of them are very good, and some are even best friends. But that doesn't mean I want to give them kisses and change blood, body fluids. I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
we never see each other naked. And, you know, we're dressed. We give each other a hug or you know, a hug or, a, you know, a cheek-to-cheek or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, you know, but women always have a best friend, so you never know. And sometimes you can arrange to have your kids and their kids, because a lot of these are married women with kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, have play dates and stuff, and so the kids are playing in the living room. And, you know, you've got your own relationship going. So it's easier for a woman to get away with it, I think.
Do you find that the longer that a woman lingers in these marriages, the more debilitating it becomes to them?
Gee, that's a hard one. Because so many of us, when we find out, like, you know, okay, we just flipped the switch, it's over, I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And other women, you know, kind of want to get all their ducks in order, and they're not sure. And I don't know. I mean, I do know women who've been in their marriages knowing that they were gay for decades, literally decades. And they don't even say the word gay in their house, and their husband goes off and does what he does. And she has, I guess, some romantic fantasies with other men that she meets, but as far as I know, you know, nothing much has come of them. But they just go on day after day living the life that they've lived. And, you know, it works for them. That's all I can tell you. If it worked for them, it wouldn't work for me. And,
right, and, you know, it doesn't work for me. And, of course, the women that I work with, I always feel that sometimes you can't be physically free, because I do work with women who have all kinds of physical disabilities,
mm-hmm.
who have illnesses, who are totally really, you know, stuck.
Dependent, and they need them.
They are dependent, and they wouldn't be able to survive on their own because they don't
mm-hmm.
have an income or a very minimal income from Social Security. And I always say that if you can't be physically free, at least if you can be emotionally free.
Yeah.
Because if you're not, this can really, you know, pull you right down the drain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as having to live day to day with someone who's out there doing something. And I think that we've found it, I think Misty would concur with this, that one of the differences between these marriages and just straight marriages that end is that in so many cases the women really do love their husbands. Wouldn't you say that, Misty?
Excuse me, absolutely. There's just, it's just such a deeper level of betrayal, and it just adds on top of it, especially when, you know, the women, I think, oftentimes internalize the issues of the marriage, even if they don't know that he's gay. They internalize these issues, and they, you know, I've worked with women, they go have plastic surgery. I mean, along the years, they've just done all these things to try to help the marriage because they feel like it's them, and it's because they love that husband so much. And it's really difficult. It's just so difficult when you get the news or find the, you know, find those little telltale signs that you try to talk yourself out of that you maybe didn't see, or, you know, maybe it didn't mean anything, just things like that. It's just so difficult. Just so different than the straight divorce. I mean, not to discount a straight divorce. We all know that's difficult as well. But there's more levels of complication with this.
With a straight divorce, there's always, you know, gee, maybe if I were taller or thinner or blonder or smarter or whatever, maybe I can compete on this, maybe we can, you know, do it, have another chance. When it's this kind of a situation, you'll never be the man of his dreams. There's nothing
exactly.
much you can do about that.
Exactly. And also I think there's more fallout that the children have to deal with as well, you know, because a lot of children, they can, you know, I used to teach school. There's a lot of children of divorce. But it does add complication if their peers find out that, you know, their dad is gay or their mother's lesbian. It can be really hard on the kids, and that's something different that a straight marriage then goes
mm-hmm.
to divorce, the children don't suffer or have to explain or try to hide.
Carol,
it's always better to find out from your parents than to find out from the neighbor or the other children in the junior high school that your father is gay.
Yeah, I wanted to ask your opinion on that, Carol.
Well, I'm
when's the right time to tell?
As soon as you can, because I think it proves that you trust your kids and you love your kids, and if there's something that you've been keeping a secret from them for years, they're going to be very unhappy when they find out that you've been keeping the secret for years, that you don't trust them, you don't love them, and it's more devastating to find it out later that you've known something that affected their life that you didn't tell them. I'm into this. I mean, not everybody agrees with me, but that's my personal opinion, that the sooner you tell them, the better. Okay, if they're tiny little children, you know, there's an appropriate way, and you don't have to get into the gory details. But certainly, you know, anybody, they will learn to live with a new normal.
Well, that, plus, you know, I feel really bad for women who feel the need to keep hiding their husband's secrets even when the marriage is over.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's healthy. But also,
and then the kids blame you. They blame you. You're the bad
exactly.
guy because you kicked him out of the house. You fought with him and so he left. You're the bad guy.
Exactly.
And you're
exactly.
the fool guy, and that's not fair either. But
and
a lot of times when parents, I have heard that when parents tell their kids, you know, years after they find out, the kids are really angry with them, that how come you couldn't trust us with that information? That it affected our lives, too, and that you should have been truthful with us. I'm just into honesty, just straight out from the very beginning. If you know something, you should say something.
I completely agree with that as well, too, Carol. I think
yeah.
the sooner the better. And always, like, you know, I worked for hospice for several years and go into the home and, you know, explain the grief process. And this is a grief process that
Absolutely.
I think so that most people go through. And with the children, you know, you use age-appropriate language. And the sooner the better. And just like you said, you don't have to go into details. Children don't need any details. But like you said, they want the truth.
Yeah, I
mean,
Daddy would rather be with men, and I'm not a man, and so that's the way it is. You know, he'll still be your father. But, you know, we're not going to be in the same house together anymore.
Exactly. How about when the father doesn't want to tell the children? What do you suggest?
Well, then you give them a deadline. You say, listen, if you don't tell them by whatever, here's a line in the sand. If you've your holiday, Christmas, New Year's, whatever the day is, you pick a day. If you haven't told them by then, I'm going to tell them. But you should tell them because, you know, or we should tell them together would be even better. So
right.
we can both be there to pick up the pieces.
No, I
but
definitely
you can't,
agree.
But you
telling
can't go into the closet when they come out. That's just not fair to anybody.
No, I definitely agree that telling them together is the best way, but unfortunately that doesn't always work out. And sometimes these men go ahead and say something before you're ready for the kids to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, they met somebody, they're having a great time, and now it's time to tell the kids whether you like it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there has to be, you know, some kind of mutual agreement there when possible, but I definitely believe that there has to be a deadline. You know,
and then you get the problem of a boyfriend of the moment, that you're exposing your kids to this new boyfriend this week, and they're bonding with them, and 3 months later, that breaks up, and they've got a new boyfriend of the moment, as I call it.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom, you should forgive the expression, but or with lesbians, girlfriend of the moment. And, you know, here these kids are bonded with this new adult, depending on their ages, and been introduced as mommy's or daddy's best friend. And, you know, and then 3 weeks later or a couple of months later, they're bonding with somebody new.
Yeah.
A lot of the kids just want to be
common.
With their parent and not with the parent, you know, friends.
I think that's common in the beginning, you know, when guys go out there and they're moving from relationship to relationship.
Yep.
And I think it's best if they can leave the children out of that whole formula to start with.
But even with the people where the guys actually do, you know, have civil ceremonies or marriages or whatever, when the kids want to see their father, they really don't want to see the father's boyfriend. And the fathers don't get that. They're so happy with this wonderful new relationship. They want to share their joy, and everybody should love who they love. And the kids really don't get that. And that I think that comes like a wedge between the fathers and the children.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've seen that happen also.
I think that can happen in a heterosexual couples as well. I mean, everybody that the parent is dating doesn't have to be in the child's life all the time.
Right, but I think the difference is that in society, we're still able to adapt to a man and woman relationship. It's a lot more difficult for kids to see a male with male relationship.
Yeah.
And I think especially for boys, you know, more so than girls, which, you know, I just wanted to mention also in our conversation tonight, and I'm really excited that we're starting a group for adult children in September, a support group, an online support group. And we have
wonderful.
A number of wonderful adult, you know, children 18 and over
who
really need support also because they don't know who to talk to.
Right.
And they're going through all kinds of emotional strain over this. so
we started one in Lake Sparks Network many years ago. It didn't quite get off the ground, but we felt that because the kids were talking about suicide so much, that it needed to be a controlled thing with, you know, an adult in the room. Mm-hmm. And what would happen was the kids would then go offline. So I just throw that out to you for watch out for that.
Yes, well, we have a number of them who are looking for support, and that's all we can do is offer it.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, it'll be something that's uplifting where they can talk to each other and realize that they're not alone, just like we always felt we're alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to hook up with support. So tell us about your group in Westchester.
Well, we started in about 2000, right after my divorce was final in 6999, and a little while after that, it was April of 2000, I started my group with help from Westchester Family Counseling Services. I had been going to the group in Manhattan, which was the first one in the New York metro area, so at that point I felt that, okay, I could contribute by having one up in Westchester, New York, and so I was helped to form it, and it's been going ever since. And we started out with about four core members, and one of the members was one of the founders of the Manhattan group as well, and she's still married, but not coming to meetings anymore, and at least not my meetings, maybe she's still going to Manhattan. And I have a list of about 20, and we have about 6 or 7 regulars, and then other people come when they can. We meet the first Thursday night of the month, and so some people, you know, work until whatever, and some come late, and some because of their work habits or traveling or whatever don't. But we have a core group. We meet just about every month in the year, and, you know, I usually have about 6 to 8 people at a meeting, both men and women. And we've had many, many alumni at this point who keep in touch and write us a little note now and then to say, you know, this is how I'm doing, thought you'd be interested, and that's always nice to hear from them. Several of our members have gotten married to straight people, and hopefully living happily ever after. And,
chapters does SS Straight Spouse Network have in this country?
How many what?
Chapters.
Oh, gee, I am not even sure of the number at the moment. Maybe I'm thinking 35 or 40, but we also, in addition to have to face-to-face support groups, we also have contacts in every state and contacts in many cities and in many countries, and we have 24/7 chat lists online, of which I am not a part, but many, many people who can't get to a support group meeting do have that. So it's people who know each other from all over the world. And once a year we gather in Florida as well, and we get about 100 people from as far away as New Zealand, Germany, England. We've had people from, you know, those places coming, but basically we just hang, as opposed to what you're doing, which is more formal and therapeutic, we really hang out on the beach and, you know, just meet each other. It's very casual. Everybody's got these little condo units on the beach, very reasonable. And, you know, we do some inside cooking. We do some cooking on the beach. We go out for meals occasionally. Out of 100 people or so, different people, you know, would 3 or 4 people get together and say, let's go out to eat or let's go sit here or whatever. So, you know, different people mingle with different groups, and, you know, a lot of people come back year after year. I think this is about the 11th year we're doing it.
Uh-huh.
And it's an annual event. We do a little fundraising. People make craft items, and we sell them at a silent auction. So it's a little bit of a fundraiser because my organization is always desperately in need of money to pay our very few paid part-time staff people. We have a lot of people who volunteer, but we have just a core group of people that we absolutely need as low-paid, unfortunately, staff people, and we're very grateful to them for, you know, giving us their expertise. But,
well, one thing that I always like to tell people, and some people really want that face-to-face experience, and, you know, there's a Straight Spouse Network in their group, you know, they should check it out.
Absolutely.
Now, it may not be for them once they get there, you know, because everyone's kind of independent within the Straight Spouse Network.
Right.
And, you know, some groups operate one way versus another.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one Carol Silverman, so they're not living in Westchester. They're really
out
of luck.
But there are lots of other people. Our executive director runs a group in Mahwah, New Jersey. The group in Manhattan is still going.
Mm-hmm.
When I go out to California to visit my kids, Amity, our founder, has a group out there that meets, I don't know, I think it's third Tuesday night of the month or something in Oakland.
Uh-huh.
And the other interesting thing is that when people travel around, they let the local group know they're coming, and even if it's not a regular meeting date, some people from the local group will host a dinner, and they'll all go out to dinner and meet the people.
Yeah, well, that's the most important thing, to meet others.
Yeah.
which, you know, I'm always glad to be able to hook people up also, even if it's,
right.
you know, one-on-one meetings, just so you have someone to talk to.
Yeah.
And very often, if, even if it's not a meeting, if somebody contacts me and they're going to be in the neighborhood and they want to go out for dinner or lunch or a cup of tea or whatever, you know, we do one-on-one stuff like that, too.
Mm-hmm. So what's the best way for people to get in touch with the Straight Spouse Network?
Okay, we have a website, www.straightspouse.org. And everything is there on our website. You can, you know, find help in your neighborhood. You can look at our reading list. You can look at stories. We have stories of different people, mixed orientation marriages, as well as divorced people and people, you know, everybody, every category. We have men with lesbian wives. We have women who've had gay husbands. It's all on the website. We have a wonderful, wonderful website, and it's very informative.
And just for the record, as you know, people are part of my network now. I don't call them mixed orientation marriages.
You call them
I'm
mixed
not,
marriages.
I'm not that polite. Yeah, I call them mismarriages. Like
I'm with
mistake.
You on that, too.
That you made a mistake, but you can fix it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't purposely
yeah.
make it, but some marriages are just mistakes. And
yeah.
I especially believe that when you're married to a gay man, that's definitely a big mistake. But for those people who, you know, I send Carol many people who don't want
Absolutely.
To deal with that
we
mistake.
Work. Bonnie and I work very well together. We're very cooperative. We're not in competition with each other in any way. I'm always recommending people to get onto your mailing list for your newsletter.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I really appreciate that. Carol, I did want to ask you another opinion.
Sure.
A couple of weeks ago, we had Dr. Francine Barbetta on our show, who wrote the book A Pebble in His Shoe.
Mm-hmm.
And Francine is really dynamite. You know, I love her as a person. And I'm so excited she's getting married in November. And, you know, it took her many years to meet her soulmate after, you know, a bad ending to a marriage where her ex-husband actually committed suicide. And, you know, the whole
After
family,
they were divorced.
They were divorced for a few
yeah.
years when that happened. But, you know, it was very difficult for the children. You know, she has three children. She grew up in a very Catholic family.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the last few years of being together, he was drinking a lot, and, you know, he's being abusive, and her book, A Pebble in His Shoe, really discusses all of that. But Francine always talks about forgiveness, and, you know, I think this is the only little place that we have a difference, because in every other way we agree with things. I'm a very big believer in forgiveness when it's earned, but just not unconditional forgiveness. Even though theoretically she really believes that when you forgive, you're the one who's, you know, helping yourself. You don't have to forgive the husband, you know, in reality. But, you know, by being forgiving, then you don't have to sit and harbor resentment. And I believe that, once again, you have to really earn that, or otherwise I believe you stay a victim just by forgiving unconditionally. But that's me. But
well, that's kind of controversial. I mean, there's some lady on the radio a couple of years ago who was forgiving the Nazis for the Holocaust. I mean, that was absurd. I mean, they'd never asked for forgiveness. They'd never admitted that they'd done anything wrong. And I think that's just the wrong use of the word forgiveness. If you look it up in Wikipedia, it says it's typically defined as the process of concluding resentment, indignation, or anger as a result of a perceived offense, difference, or mistake. Blah, blah. To grant free pardon and to give up all claim on account of an offense or debt. Well, that's kind of ridiculous. It goes
mm-hmm.
on to say, in practical terms, it may be necessary for the offender to offer some form of acknowledgement, apology, and or restitution, or even just ask for forgiveness in order for the wronged person to believe himself to able to forgive. And I kind of go along with that, you know, if somebody, you know, were to say, yes, I realize what I've done to you, I'm so sorry, what can I do to make it up? You know, something like that. If they sincerely and honestly apologize and try to rectify the wrong, you know, then that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm not into forgiveness as a concept unless somebody asks for it and does something to acknowledge the fact of what they've done to you.
Yeah, it's funny.
It just doesn't ring true for me.
A lot of the meetings that have to deal with recovery, like AA and NA,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of their basic tenets is asking people for forgiveness, you know, for wrecking their lives.
Yeah, well, then I agree with that. If you're going to ask somebody and say, hey, I'm sorry, and I know I did it wrong, and I'm so sorry, and what can I do to make it right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's not, many of us, like me, whose husbands have never even admitted to being gay, and continue to say that I'm crazy and I broke up the family, I mean, this is kind of, you know, what kind of forgiveness, you know?
Right.
You've looted my family. You've looted me of half my life at the time. I was 27 when I married him. I was 54 when I found out he was gay. It was half my life at the time. You know, I lived your lie for all those years, not even my real, authentic, you know, life. That's a lot, and he hasn't, you know, I think if he's not going to at least acknowledge that and some of the hurt and the pain that he's caused,
mm-hmm.
I don't see any benefit to me to say you're forgiven. I mean, what is that? That can do a thing to me. It's still there.
Well, Misty was in a very abusive marriage, too, right, Misty?
Oh, absolutely. And what I do believe in forgiveness, however, I completely understand and honor what both of you are saying. I work with a lot of people that they have to take that route, too. The route I take with forgiveness, I think, is just a little bit different, and I think Dr. Barbetta discussed that somewhat. It's very similar to what I believe. I think there's different levels and different types of forgiveness. But basically, the marriage was so abusive. I just forgave myself for staying in that marriage because I didn't seek contact with my ex-husband because my life was in danger. So, you know, I forgave myself. I had to forgive myself for staying as long as I did, for not trusting my instincts, not, you know, honoring myself as a person. So I forgave myself in terms of to get on, to move forward, and so I wouldn't drag myself into a victim-type situation. But that's what suits me. It's not going to fit everyone else.
But you're not the same person you were. But now you're not the same person you were then. But you've moved on from being whoever that person was who was allowing themselves to be abused.
Absolutely.
And you did the best you could under the circumstances when you were in those circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, there's not a lot.
Yeah, I think we can all forgive ourselves. It's just that, you know, I think that just unconditional forgiveness. Now, once again, that's me. I don't want other people to think, you know, that
yeah.
I'm the only way. I think each of us is different, and how we survive is different, and what makes sense to each of us is different. You know, and I have definitely forgiven my ex-husband because he has earned it, as far as I'm concerned, by being honestly, sincerely sorry for what he put me through.
Mm-hmm.
But that took many years until he was able to get that point across to me that I really believed it. Because I think that he didn't understand the anguish that I went through. And no matter what I would say, he would just kind of snuff it off until finally he understood it. But if he hadn't, I don't think I could ever forgive him. I just feel that some things are not forgivable.
Right. And you move on anyway. I mean, with me, it's 13 years, you know, since my divorce. And, you know, I don't think about it every day. I really don't. It's gotten to be a box where he gets smaller every day that he's in my life. The peak of my life that's him is smaller every single day as I get older and as I move on. So he's
there.
What
kind of relationship
does he have now
with your children?
To the best of my knowledge, and really I don't ask and I don't want to know too much, but to the best of my knowledge, they maintain a sort of an irregular email relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's just, you know, the way it is. And I actually had a very, you know, you never know how your kids are reacting to anything, but I actually overheard my older daughter saying something to somebody about the fact that he lacked integrity. And I'd never really heard them say anything critical about him before, so that was very encouraging that they got the message. That, you know, yes, he's their father, but he completely lacks integrity. And that was good to know that they know how to think on their own and make their own conclusions.
Do they ever bring up the gay issue to you?
He visited my younger daughter in March, and the only question I asked her afterward was, is he gay yet? And her answer to me was, we don't talk about the past, and he doesn't mention being gay.
Mm-hmm.
So I leave it. I'm really not interested in, you know, anything about him. The less I know about him, the happier I am.
About your son?
My son is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
He was not good before that, and this didn't help, and my son is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he had other issues before that, but the fact that his father tried to kill him wasn't nice. I mean, that wasn't really helpful.
Right. How do you
in
ever
your life,
recover
that doesn't
from
help.
That?
So he's a mess. He's been a mess. He'll be a mess until somehow we get, you know, through all this stuff, and he won't go for help. So, you know, at the moment, we're just sort of in a status quo with him. We get along okay, and his sister, who lived in the same, you know, in California near him, gets along okay, but he's not a really normal, productive, happy citizen of the world these days that I can figure out. He's muddling through somehow, but he's not where he should be.
Now, how about does the Straight Spout Network provide resources for people besides support?
that's what we do. We do support. That, I mean, we don't give people money. We
I'm saying, let's say if you needed advice on a good lawyer.
We're kind of hesitant about recommending people. We don't have a list of good lawyers and good accountants and good whatevers. Everybody is so spread out anyway, even if it were in my own county. I can tell them who not to go to, because I've had bad experiences with lawyers. And at the support group meetings, somebody might mention I have a great shrink or I have a great lawyer or whatever, but we don't maintain any list of in any way like that. We do have sort of a favorite therapist in Manhattan. Her name is Bridget Vidunas, and she seems to get it. And even when I came on board in Manhattan, people already knew that she was very good at these problems. And so that's somebody that, before I would recommend her, I did go see her once, and I said, yes, in fact, she did seem to get the idea of what was going on and, had a good way of handling things. But I only saw her that one time. But I don't think I could ever recommend someone I hadn't met. But in the support group meetings, people do. They'll tell you who their good lawyers were or who their good shrinks are and things like that.
Now, would Kathy have any access to good lawyers in New Jersey?
She might.
Okay. We have one of our members who had asked us about that.
Yeah, I'm going to let her, because she runs a support group meeting, so she might, because of that, have some input into, who her people have been happy with.
Yeah, maybe you could ask her that question and let me know.
Okay. Or you could, her email is sssnnj@aol.com.
Okay, I'll write that down. SSSNNJ,
Straight Spouse Support Network of New Jersey. Because we used to have the word support in the name, but we don't anymore. But she's sssnnj@aol.com.
Well, I'll definitely drop her a line tonight.
Yeah, good. She goes to bed early, because she won't be, she'll probably won't answer you until tomorrow, but that's okay.
It's not a problem. I don't expect people to stay awake 20 hours a day like me. For some odd reason, but that's me being odd.
Yeah, no, it's really been, the organization is really good, because there's so much of it out there, and I can't tell you how many lives we've saved that I've heard of, where somebody somewhere will say, to somebody on one of those web lists, I've just taken 12 of these pills, how many does it take to kill myself? And somebody at the other end of the world is going to call talk them through it and say, call 911 or whatever, or they will themselves get in touch with 911 locally and convince them that there's a problem in their jurisdiction. And I can't tell you, I'm maybe a dozen people that I know of. Who were saved at the last minute from because a lot of people are suicidal at some point during this process, and I'm no exception. I was suicidal for 24 hours, and I ended up, of course, obviously not killing myself, but I really, a lot of people are on medication. I would say over 90% of the people are on some kind of medication at some point. I was not one of them, because I'm too scared of medication.
Uh-huh.
But definitely I was suicidal for 24 hours, and I had a plan how I was going to do it, and it was just, everything was... It wasn't just the divorce. Other things were happening at the same time. And I just felt the only way that the world could be better was without me in it, and that I was the problem. And without me, everything else was going to work out fine for everybody around me. And, as I say, I didn't end up killing myself, but I certainly, it's reality-based that, a lot of people do think about it. And
I think that's very normal when you feel you're losing everything that has any meaning to you and it's being taken away from you.
Yeah.
I certainly know women who go through those thoughts.
It's like having an earthquake. The whole earth is shaking under your feet. There's nothing solid. Everything you thought was real. With heterosexual couples, when they go through divorce, they lose their future. We lose our past and our history as well, because you're always thinking, when he went out to the bathroom, did he meet a man in the bathroom? Whatever. We went to Provincetown once. We went to Key West once. Had he prearranged to meet people, somehow getting away for a half an hour to go to the bathroom or take a nap or take a walk on the beach? Had he prearranged to meet somebody? So you're always second-guessing your past, which doesn't happen that much with a heterosexual breakup.
I'm just curious, because you do work with mixed marriages.
Yeah.
Or mismarriages. Do you find a lot of these women are on medication to stay in their marriages?
I find probably more, about 90% are on medication just in general to cope with the whole thing. I'm not sure if it's to stay in their marriage or not. But the whole thing is such an overwhelming thing that, you're losing sleep, you don't know what to do, you're obsessing. I was obsessing all the time, although I didn't go on medication. It was like all you can think about is what's the future hold, what's the lawyer going to say. You're not in control of your life, of your time, of your money. You're just completely out of control, which is a terrible situation for people to be in. Mm-hmm. You can't make plans to do anything because the lawyer might need you.
You know, I know that in the beginning, I think we all obsess that it colors every place we go, every thought we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter what we're thinking, it reverts right back to that.
Yeah. But I don't think people go on medication to stay in their marriage. I think they're just on medication in general. And,
well, I found a lot
and the
of
people
women.
I know who are staying together are not necessarily on medication for that. They, you know, there may be other things.
Yeah, I find a lot of women who's not, well, of course, I don't deal with a lot of women who are staying in marriages. I send them to you.
Right.
But those women who are stuck in their marriages at the moment, a lot of them take medication. Or they were taking medication because something was wrong in their marriage. And I always tell women that if you have to take medication to stay in a marriage, that should be your key, hit number one, that you have a problem. Whether you're straight, gay, or otherwise, no woman should have to stay somewhere and take medication in order to cope or survive.
Yeah.
You know, to me, there's something really wrong with that whole concept. You know, and it really upsets me when I find out that women have to change their brain patterns in order to stay in a marriage.
But I think they're on medication just to get through the legal process as well. So I don't think it has to do with staying in. I think it's just the whole stress of the whole thing.
Well, temporarily, you know, I can certainly understand it, and I certainly tell women, you know, you have to, you know, do whatever you have to cope,
mm-hmm.
but you can't, you know, let it become a crutch to you. Because otherwise, you know, you're giving up a lot of what life has to offer. You know, use it as a temporary stopgap.
If you're being numb, yeah.
Right.
I haven't found
yourself?
That, but if you have that, I certainly, you know, don't invalidate what your findings are. I haven't found that.
Yeah.
I think most of the people I know just can't wait to get off this stuff. They think of it as temporary, and they don't get addicted to it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably why I didn't want to do anything in the first place, because I didn't want to, you know, be tempted to not feel everything and do everything as I was going through it. I wanted to just experience, go through it to get through it.
That's how I am, too. How about you, Misty?
I have to agree. Being a therapist, I've always said that if you can get through something without medication, try it. But also, on the flip side, if it's taking months and months and months and there's absolutely no improvement whatsoever, then discuss it with your family physician. Because I have seen it make a world of difference in people, you know, after the divorce, after the separation, a small dose. But however, I think it's best to not, if you don't have to, just because there's so many side effects to some of these medications. You just have to really, really be careful. And like you said, you know, really see what's the issue at hand. If you're taking medication to stay, what can you do? You know, what are some of the solutions? Just don't take something to numb yourself. Take something to, you know, live life. You know, don't take something to numb yourself and numb your pain through it.
I think it's harder to also go through recovery and grieving if you're always numbing yourself.
Yeah.
Because the day will come when you have to really deal with it. And I
absolutely.
Think you're just suppressing the inevitable.
And I tell people with the grief-related issues, you are going to grieve, whether it be now or later. You will grieve. You know, and it's sort of like a bank account that builds up interest. Sometimes if you keep putting it off, it can be worse, you know. And, of course, everyone's different. Everyone is absolutely different. And another thing that I find and I tell my clients, be careful. There's other numbing agents besides medications. You know, there can be wine, there can be beer, there can be, you know, other types of alcohol. Be careful. Don't, you know, no one becomes an alcoholic by just saying, okay, I'm just going to have this one drink tonight. You know, these things can happen easy, especially when you're going through such a difficult situation. So you need to monitor those things.
I think that grieving is, you know, the hardest thing that we all have to go through in the first year afterwards, I find to always be the worst, because that's when you go through so much of your self-doubt and re-questioning yourself and just making all the adjustments of now being a single person, a single mother, having to live life, you know, totally differently than you were expecting it. You know,
and the first year is when you have the first Christmas after you know, and the first Easter after you know, and the first New Year's Eve, and the first Valentine's Day, and the first of whatever, after you found out that the man you were married to is not the man that is reality.
Well,
so what you're grieving is also the grieving the dream that wasn't, or the reality that you thought was real that wasn't.
And I think another issue is also, Carol, that many women don't have marriages like we had. You know, who really were happy in their marriages and who really thought they were married to their best friends.
Right.
And they really enjoyed doing the holidays with their husbands and kids. and never realized there was a problem, and now having to, you know, lose all of that to something that's so foreign to us, because I still feel that no matter how much intellectually that we can accept homosexuality, emotionally, when it's in your marriage, it's a totally different story. You know, it's one thing to have gay friends. It's another thing to have a gay husband.
Right. Though gay friends are just fine. Gay husbands are not so just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I agree.
Have you found with your women or men that their children have a higher percentage of being gay?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is definitely genetic. And it's very often the opposite child. So if you have a gay father, it may be the daughter rather than the son who's gay.
Right, which happened in my case.
Which happens in very many cases that I've seen, you know, contrary to perhaps popular opinion. But
mm-hmm.
there's definitely, and all these guys who can't come out because their father is so homophobic, well, sure, their father's homophobic, he's gay. And the best defense is a good offense. So as soon as the father dies, you know, suddenly these guys are coming out. But it didn't come from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it came from their families. And if you look around, there's a lot of unmarried, you know, uncles or aunts or whatever, basically because they're not interested.
I always say that gay is not isolated.
No.
I'm a true believer in, you know, genetics.
Absolutely.
And I really do believe that it's genetically handed down from one generation to another.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's not from a parent to a child, definitely within the family.
Yeah,
but
we have a lady who both of her daughters are gay, and they came out before her husband.
Right, and that's why I tell women, you know, who, as hard as it is and as much as homosexuality is upsetting you, you know, for the sake of your children, you know, who may also be gay, you don't want them to have to live that unauthentic life like their fathers did.
Right.
But you have to be careful not to mix the issues together, you know, make a blanket condemnation on homosexuality so that your children feel they can't come to you.
But they also learn what they live in. They can see how unhappy the whole thing is, and it kind of, you know, hopefully will prevent them from marrying somebody heterosexual if they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do learn what they live, and if they see there's much unhappiness around and what it's causing, you know, then that might give them thought.
I think it's easier today for younger people not to get married than it was in our generation.
Yep.
You know, you don't.
But we're still getting young people, I think, straight spouse network.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, we think we're going to put ourselves out of business and be obsolete, and of course that's our goal, but it isn't happening.
No, we have it too. You know, we have women in their 20s, you
mm-hmm.
know, and certainly they're aware of what the situation is, but they still can't believe it's happening to them.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think it will always be there, but I think that when you have gay children who grow up in that kind of an environment, you know, and they see the destruction that it does, hopefully that they'll be smarter when it comes to their own lives. As far as
well, especially the people who are in your organization and mine, where they've, you know, where a parent is either out or been outed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're freer to come out than a family, you know, a very Orthodox family of any religion, where it's, you know, forbidden to be gay and it's forbidden to come out and, you know, all that other stuff.
Yeah, so I feel that's really the real horrible part of this whole thing, is when you have those kind of religious and cultural differences where you're not allowed to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
Or a family's going to disown you when you are, which is why a lot of these men feel forced into being married anyway.
Yep.
And, you know, we see so much of this going on. You know, even today, like you're saying, younger people are still feeling that kind of pressure because of family or religious beliefs. So I don't think this will ever be a problem that will be solved or resolved. But
well, we're optimistic. I don't know. It may never happen, but we're optimistic, and we're trying to be out there, you know, educating. I'm very active in the local LGBT community, and I go to, you know, they have some straight partners, which are very good, which is PFLAG and
mm-hmm.
Straight Spouse Network and a couple of other organizations that are really into all of the gay rights. You want to marry, go marry, leave us out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Another one of our issues is that we don't believe you can be reprogrammed, and most of the people who support the gay folk, as we do, as straight allies, feel that way. And, you know, because that eliminates some of the problems of people coming out in a religious organization where they say, oh, you're just not praying hard enough. Jesus is going to help you, or God is going to help you, and, you know, so on and so on. And they have to realize that, you know, God made them the way they are, and there's a good reason for it. And you don't have to commit suicide over that, and you don't have to go into depression over that. Just live your valid life.
Well, that's why I think that gay rights are so important, because when
mm-hmm.
people can feel accepted for who they are,
right.
they won't have to try to be who they're not.
Right. And the big and the biggest anti-gay people are the gay ones. I mean, the ones who are closeted gay people. All those people in Washington who are voting against gay rights. Well, guess what? It turns out they're playing footsie under the men's groom door. They're being caught in the bushes with other men. And here they are trying to prevent, you know, people of the same, you know, persuasion from having the rights that they should have.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so true. You know, I always say that one of the signs of gay is when somebody's overly homophobic.
Right. Absolutely.
Because it's a form of self-hatred, and they're also trying to protect their own reputations.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that by gay bashing, that that's going to be the answer on how people aren't going to think they're gay.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at some of these ministers, like Ted Haggard, and some of the politicians, like McGreevy,
yep.
You know, who have now, you know, I guess they've been exposed. And, of course, they were very anti-gay and all the things that they did.
Yeah.
So I think that has to be also a clear-cut, you know, sign. If somebody's always talking anti-gay, you have to wonder why.
And the whole Proposition 8 in California, I mean, all of those, that whole Mormon organization, I mean, there's you know, I'm in Utah a lot because I ski out there. There's tons of gay people in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the people who tried to prevent the gay people of California from being able to marry. Well, they effectively did. They put all their money and their effort and their organizational ability into getting Proposition 8, which is ridiculous. And they did the same thing in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just ridiculous because they shouldn't have that kind of political clout.
Now, in Connecticut, are there same-sex marriages?
Absolutely. They're sanctioned. One of the members of our group, her ex-husband, was married to a guy in Connecticut. Legally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his partner ended up dying, but it was the love of his life once he finally, you know, figured the whole thing out.
And how about New York? How are things going?
Oh, we're not going well in New York at the moment. No,
mm-hmm.
there's just a handful of places, and we're not doing well in New York. But they're hoping to put Proposition 8 back on the ballot in California and, you know, hopefully keep the Mormons out.
Well.
So we'll see what happens, because that'll be a big one. California's going to be a big one when it happens.
Yes, I really thought that would happen long ago.
I just couldn't believe when that happened.
Especially in
California. They have a movie out called 8, The Mormon Proposition, which absolutely delineates, you know, the effect of the Mormon Church on
mm-hmm.
Proposition 8, which is kind of a unfortunately shocking movie.
Listen, Carol, we only have 2 minutes, so I want you to just address one more thing.
Sure.
Do you strongly advise women who are staying with their husbands to have safe sex?
Absolutely.
No matter
absolutely.
How much they tell you that they're not doing anything.
Absolutely, because the men having sex with men, the MSM people who then come home to their straight wives and who swear that they're straight, are passing around AIDS, HIV, venereal diseases of all kinds, PVS. I mean, you just name it, and they're passing them around. It's just incredible the amount of venereal diseases being passed around by men who come home to their wives and have sex with men during the day.
And that's why no matter how much your husband's in denial, you can't be. You have to protect yourself because so many of our women have contacted, you know, contacted.
Absolutely. No, you've got to use protection or you've got to not have sex with them.
Right, but
I don't know what you can do if they swear they're not. I don't know what you can do about that except just say, you know, protection or we're not having sex.
Exactly. Protect yourself. Don't believe what they're telling you.
Yeah.
Because if you know that that's what their inclination is, they're out there doing it.
Absolutely.
They're just not looking at pictures. They're acting on them.
What
so
saved
Carol,
me was the fact that we had hardly any sex, so that was what saved me because we really hardly were having... We had no sex for years on end, and that was great because I could have been sick.
That.
Yeah.
Who knows where you would be.
Right.
But I want to thank you so much for taking this time because you're always so inspirational to our women who are listening.
Anytime. Just give me a call.
Oh, don't worry. I will. And hopefully you'll be back with us in the fall. And thank you always for your great insight and your great information.
And thank you for the opportunity to help you spread the word.
Thank you so much, Carol. You know I love you.
You too.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay, you too, Misty.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, Misty, Carol, always so interesting.
Very interesting.
I know. She's a wonderful person. I'm really so thrilled that she could be with us tonight. So, Misty, you're home safe and sound, right?
I am, and glad to be here.
Yep, and next week we have a very special guest, Dr. Jack Pranther.
Yes, that's so good.
Talk about building up self-esteem. He's a psychologist, and he's going to give us some good hints on how to do that. And next week we'll also talk about your workshops that are coming up.
Yep.
And I hope that everybody who's listening has a wonderful week. And Misty, you're going to need some rest, I think.
I am ready to go to bed early tonight, which is rare for me. Yeah. No one will have to rock me to sleep tonight, as my mother says sometimes. So, yes, I'm ready for bed, Bonnie. I really am.
Was it hot there?
Well, it's hot, but it's raining, so it's not too bad. Tomorrow it'll be extra toasty, I'm quite sure.
Yes. Well, welcome back to Florida.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So to all of our listeners, we wish you a wonderful week, and we send you all our love, right?
Absolutely. Love to all.
Okay, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.